Welcome to Radio Physics, a collaboration with the Aspen Center for Physics, KDNK Community Radio in Carbondale, and advanced physics students from Roaring Fork Valley High Schools. The students spend a week working at the center during the summer and get to talk one-on-one to some of the distinguished physicists who are here. I'm Patty Fox, and I'm hosting today's program, which was recorded during the teen summer program at the Aspen Center for Physics. With me today are Hannah Jewell from Glenwood Springs High School and India Cardamone from Aspen High School, both rising seniors. They will be interviewing Marta Wookshaw, an assistant professor at the Icahn School of Music, Mount Sinai, New York. Marta completed her PhD in computer science, which makes her an unusual participant at the Aspen Center for Physics, but she will explain the connection during our interview. Her research is focused on theoretical and computational aspects of population genetics and evolutionary dynamics of fast-evolving systems, such as viruses, cancer, and the immune system. She's developed models to predict the evolution of influenza virus, and she consults with the World Health Organization Influenza Unit in their biannual vaccine selection meetings. Marta's research interests are at the interface of computer science, information theory, and evolutionary biology. She's interested in which patterns are related to fitness of fast-evolving populations, such as pathogens in cancer cells, and how the evolution of these systems is determined by interactions with the immune system. She has developed models which, based on genetic and biophysical properties of circulating influenza viruses, predict which mutations will be dominating in the following season. These computational methods are currently used to advise the influenza vaccine selection. She also develops predictive evolutionary models for cancer under strong immune pressure induced by therapy. And she is interested in finding genetic properties behind these interactions and in using this knowledge in predicting and ultimately controlling progression of disease. Welcome, Marta, and thank you for being with us today.
Welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. So we were hoping if you could first kind of explain a little bit how you started this research, how you got into studying influenza, and how you're developing a cure for this.
All right, so I started working on influenza really after my PhD. And so I got my PhD in computer science. I already have work in computational biology on in genetics during my PhD. But this was the first project that was about evolution. And I had a collaborator, a professor, actually a physics professor, who has been working on influenza and was interested in dynamics. And then we thought that I had actually some skills from computer science and algorithmics that could help to use the data and like put them like one framework and then to check different ideas we had about like what makes influenza virus evolve. So for me, it was like to start, okay, we can take these different sequences, like genetic sequences of from different viruses, and we can reconstruct the genealogical tree of those viruses that spans the last 40 years of evolution of the virus. So this was something I could do as a computer scientist. And then, and we knew already that those trees have a very they have a very peculiar shape. So they don't look like randomly, but they are very long. And then you see that there is usually very strong selection acting on viruses, which means that if you see viruses that are present now, then their last common ancestor on this genealogical tree will be about 3 years ago, 3 years back to the past, and all other diversity will be eliminated from the tree. So this is a very narrow path of evolution, a very strong selection acting on virus. And we wanted to know why it is so, using And like we wanted to check if there's anything that we know about mutations in these viruses and maybe interaction with the immune system of the host that makes this virus to behave this way. And whether we are able to write equations that describe that.
So you created models which, based on genetic and biophysical properties of circulating influenza viruses, predict which mutations will be dominating the fall season. What was the process of creating these models like?
So first it was, I was telling you, we could reconstruct these trees. And then, you have a tree. This looks really like a genealogical tree when you build a history of your family. The only difference is that a virus does not have two parents, but usually has in most cases, it has only one parent. And this means that, how this happens is that you have, when somebody has an infection, it can spread, it can infect some other people, and the viruses usually evolve in this process. But this all comes from one previous virus that was in some other person. So you can reconstruct this genealogical tree that differs from our genealogies, that is, there's only one parent. And then you can ask what are the mutations that are the ones that lead to successful, evolution. So which viruses are the ones that spread most? And so we know something about, we can know which, we see the protein that is for which we reconstruct this evolution. We know its shape. And we also know that some parts of these proteins are the ones that are recognized by the human immune system. These are the parts where the antibodies recognize the protein. And we could already see on those trees that the mutations that appear in these regions of the interactions are more beneficial. So these are the ones that make the virus to infect more people in the future. So we wanted to know, so this was the basis of the model, to reward mutations that help the virus evade the immune system of the host.
How accurate would you say these models are?
So they are, I think they are pretty accurate. Of course, this is, we only have actually 20 years of data to validate such models. But we could, for instance, check how often do we predict growth of a clade, a viral clade correctly or decline. And here we had something 80% of accuracy on average. But of course, these models, we have to every year is every half a year when we make predictions for vaccine consultation meetings is another challenge. There are new things that come into and new things about influenza that we don't know that can affect the evolution. And there's always a question if a simple model that works on average will work in this particular year, where there might have been some other effects. So we keep on working and improving models and adding new types of data to inform them.
Once you identify which parts of the genome has changed, how do you go about kind of creating a vaccine for the influenza after that?
So a vaccine, you can imagine the vaccine is a strain that has been, it's based on a strain, viral strain that has been circulating in the past. And you use this strain to vaccinate people so they are immune to this strain. So here the objective is to pick a strain that will be a dominant one in the future season. So that's why you want to predict which of the currently circulating strains will be the most dominant one year ahead. So so the goal is, once you have identified properties of mutations that make some viruses more fit, to use this to project the structure of the population into the next season, and then to pick the vaccine strain from the ones that is predicted to be the most prevalent. And this is what this fitness model that we build based on properties of mutations allow us to do.
So in the beginning of your career, why did you choose to do oncology and genomic science?
So this was not actually the beginning of my research. This was really came later, and I think already after my PhD. So yes, I started as a computer scientist. And then towards end of my, well, actually like around my master's, I got interested in biology because it was actually a nice application of computer science into something applied. I was interested in machine learning, in artificial intelligence, and I thought that computer science comes up with methods where you can learn a computer or a computer algorithm to reason about data that you see and explain what is behind this data. Then cancer is actually it's something that is easy to, there's a lot of data from cancer, and like computational biology students are always very excited about working on cancer because you really get data from cancer and can say, okay, I'm going to apply computational methods and maybe I can find something new, something specific about this disease. For instance, like which are the genes that are most commonly active in cancer and what makes a cancer cells different from normal cells. So this is always very, very interesting for people who come from math and computer science, that they can suddenly do something meaningful and close to, like they can help in healthcare. And also there's like a lot of really computation, like so much, like there's so much that is to be discovered that is unknown, that like these computational methods are really needed in the analysis of such data. And there's also a lot of data available because this, of course, a very important disease, and we like everybody wants to understand what's going on with cancer.
So I'm curious, what was the connection between what you did with the influenza virus and how that made you think of how cancer works and how we could possibly use those same techniques to treat cancer?
Yeah, this is a very good question. So there's one thing that is like actually very like common to cancer and viruses and pathogens is that they evolve fast, they acquire a lot of mutations. So which makes them like interesting, like an easy target to also for our research, because we have data that we can gather in our like lifetime to study their evolution. In terms of, I started working on influenza, and I have developed these methods for fitness of viruses. And then what was actually known about this virus, there were two things, right? There was this genealogy of, that you can reconstruct genealogy and of the viral population. And that this viral population is very heterogeneous, so that you have like multiple different families present at the same time that compete with each other. And actually, cancer evolves in a very similar way. So it starts with one cell that acquires some mutations that make the cell stop cooperating with other cells in the organism. And then it starts proliferating and acquiring new mutations and expanding. And this is how a tumor is formed. And there are like very strong selective pressures also on cancer cells. So they have to mutate to adapt to be able to survive in this environment. But they also have high heterogeneity. And you can also reconstruct a genealogical tree like you do for viruses. The question is that there's a big difference, though, is that a virus, like influenza, has only a small number of genes, and we have a quite good understanding what these genes are doing. While a cancer cell is a human cell and has 20 2,000 genes, so it's a very complicated system.
When do you think you will be able to, like, actually cure cancer with this new system?
Well, so I actually, about 4 years ago, after I, so this is when I started working on cancer, I thought that actually nothing that works for influenza, that these approaches would not be able to be brought to cancer to, like, predict what is really good for, beneficial or disadvantages for cancer. And then I heard about these novel therapies, immunotherapies, that use our own immune system to fight cancer. So, like, cancer cells usually become resistant and they hide from the immune system. But now this novel therapy is just remove this resistance mechanism from cancer. And then our immune system is a very, a versatile weapon. So it can really adapt and look for weak points of cancer cells. So I think that now, if we understand how to, we can direct the immune system to fight cancer, we will be able to constrain evolution of tumors, and this gives us hope to that we will be able to contain this evolution, like we already did with HIV virus to some extent. So we people could propose therapies that just control the evolution and find different weak points of the virus, and so that it does not have any escape mechanism at the end. But of course, it's a research for many years.
So regarding the cure for cancer, there's so many different kinds of cancer. Like, there's skin cancer, there's leukemia, there's so many different kinds. For the cure of cancer, are there going to have to be different kinds of the cure of cancer, like different things that you put into the immune system to help it get rid of those cancer cells? Or is there going to be, like, one common cure that'll just work for every cancer?
Yes.
Or how's that going to work?
So moreover, like, cancer is not like a virus that you get it from somebody else, that you get infected from somebody else. It's always something that is created de novo. So you can have skin cancer, but every person has their own skin cancer, right? But they have common properties. And so we already know that there are certain genes that are more often mutated in skin, and other genes are more often mutated in pancreatic cancer or in lung cancer. So this is something that is being investigated. So a hope will be that you could, for instance, combine immunotherapies with something that is more, there's also targeting this particular type of cancer, so that you come up with therapies that are combined and designed for this particular type of tumor. I'm not sure if we will be able to really find something universal, but the some basis, which is like the immune system detecting tumor cells, are would work, but it would have to be something more extended.
What is the most challenging part of all this research?
I think there's like many different aspects. I think it's all actually, I think it's all, everything is fun. But for me, as somebody with more like mathematical background, I always have to learn new biology and learn to communicate to collaborators from like oncologists and biologists. So there's always something new to learn, which is when I started working on cancer, I really didn't know much about immune system, we just keep on learning. We often work with data from experiments, and we have to understand how these experiments are designed. Very often they don't look at all as what we expect. So there are different sources of noise that you have to understand. And sometimes it's not noise, it's just that biology works differently than we think, and we just discovered that. So, for instance, here at the Aspen Center, now we have a working group, and we look at this type of data, and this does not look at all what we expected, but we have came up with a different hypothesis, well, with a hypothesis that we're testing that may explain actually what we're happening, and is giving us new, we're just going to understand the biology behind this experiments better.
How is physics working in this? How are you using physics to find some of these things?
So physicists have worked and for a long time and on models that explain the dynamics of large systems with many interacting components like gases, and so there are ready models that are very well understood. Now they appear to be very useful for biology, where you also have large systems that have many interactions. For instance, you have genes, and these genes make proteins, and these proteins have interactions between each other, and they affect the behavior of the whole system. So many of physics models are very useful for modeling. What's happening in an organism, but also in evolution. So here you have fitness is like an energy that is explaining the dynamics of a system when it evolves. So what's going to happen in the future of the system?
So is it helpful to be around many other physicists, and do they help with your work?
Yeah, so I think for me it was very useful and very interesting. So I started working with physicists during my PhD. And one thing that I really learned from physics was how to ask scientific questions. So I think that I didn't have it as a computer science major, where most of the problems I worked on were already posed. So we already were given a problem, and our task was to find the best algorithm that solves it. But in science, you actually have to know how to ask your questions and how to make hypotheses and then to solve it. And that's actually when mathematical or technical skills are useful, when you want to answer the questions.
So influenza virus, your study on that helped you find eventually a cure for cancer, which is awesome. What other things do you think this could apply to?
So this general approach to of thinking on evolution and selective forces of fitness and the whole idea, and already something that I know, we already know that one can succeed in describing in mathematical equations these functions that describe how these different influenza strains will grow. So this gives us some courage, I think, to try it on also on different systems. So there are other viruses HIV. That is also more complicated. So one can think that, okay, so maybe we can also describe other interactions that affect the evolution of other viruses. And of course, cancer, which I have already been working on. This was very rewarding to show that similar principles can be used for such different systems like influenza and cancer. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is the future of oncology care?
I really hope that there will be that cancer will be that we will find some way to contain and control evolution of cancer, and that it will become something like a chronic disease that you maybe just take a pill and you can live with that. I don't think we will be able to completely eradicate cancer because it's something that is, somehow intrinsic to our biology. It's just an error in cell replication that at some point will just occur. But we hope that it's just going to be a disease that you can live with.
We could go on for another hour, Marta. Thank you so very much. I hope that the audience really has a chance to see that how physics really applies to biology, and computer science brings in, you know, new ways of analyzing the data while the physicists keep developing better ways to ask the questions. Because really, physics is a way of thinking as much as the computation involved. So thank you so much to Marta Wookshaw from the Icahn School of Medicine in Mount Sinai, New York, and Hannah Jewell from Glenwood Springs, and India Cardamone from Aspen High Schools. Tune in to Radio Physics on the fourth Tuesday of every month. And if you'd like to know more about the events here at the Aspen Center for Physics, you can take a look at our website at aspenphys.org.